Okay. So, welcome again to another talk on this morning. Continuing on from something I was saying last night to give you a full understanding of the process of meditation. And this is the little idea of meditation of the art of disappearing. Ajahn Chah, he always used to say that we meditate not to gain things, but to let go of things. Not to have more attainments, but to actually to start to disappear. And it reminds me of one funny story which comes up now. I told the monks this, and I think I mentioned this at Nolamara Temple. But many of you may not have heard that when I was in San Francisco last month, and I was talking to a Sri Lankan gentleman who told the story of this old lady from way in the remote areas of Sri Lanka, who was a very devout Buddhist. Now, one of these sweet old ladies who would go and offer dana to the monks and go to every poya day. And be careful, never underestimate sweet old Sri Lankan ladies. And there she was. She went to visit her relations in Colombo, and some of the friends thought, "Ah, look, this is, she's done lots of, you know, good karma and merits. Why don't we sort of send her off onto one of these retreats they were holding in Sri Lanka?" And these were one of those type of retreats, and there's a few of them, you know, they're pretty scandalous, but they're there, where you pay some money for the retreat, and they were sponsoring it. And for 2 weeks you do meditation and studies and interviews, and at the end of the retreat they give you like an exam to see how much you have progressed. And if they really think that you've made a lot of progress, they give you an enlightenment certificate of like being a stream winner. That's the first stage. Or the second stage, being a once returner, or a non-returner, an anagami. Or they even give out arahat certificates, signed and authenticated by I don't know who, but anyway, there it is. So apparently there's more than one organization which gives out enlightenment certificates in Colombo. But anyway, this is the danger of this, and especially the danger of that sort of stuff with sweet old Sri Lankan women. So, you know, she said, "Oh, okay, I might as well do that." So that she went along to this retreat, she meditated and studied, and she did really well. At the end of the retreat, they gave her a Sowan certificate. That's a stream winner. And many people in Sri Lanka, they would give their left arm to become a Sowan, a stream winner. They would struggle so hard and they would be so happy. But when she got her stream winning certificate, she was very upset and angry. And I couldn't understand, "What are you so angry for? Why are you scolding us so much? You're a stream winner." And then she said, "Don't you remember me? I was here last year and you gave me a non-returner certificate." "I've been demoted." They didn't recognize her. So that's the trouble with those certificates. Most of the time. Anyway. We don't sort of meditate to get certificates. We meditate to learn how to let go of things. And when we let go of things, it means they disappear. That's what letting go means. They're not there anymore. They've vanished. And much of meditation of the Dhamma is allowing things to vanish and be free. Imagine just all those bad memories of the past. Wouldn't it be wonderful, you know, to find, I say, that delete button. They're all spam, as I said the other day. Find that delete button so they all vanish. So you're free of the past. And all your worries and fears of the future, to find that delete button so that vanishes too. So you can be like the kid again who just plays in the park, has a wonderful time, and doesn't really worry about tomorrow. And just, you know, whatever happened 5 minutes ago, the old scene of kids, you know, crying and hitting each other. And 5 minutes later, just playing together like nothing ever happened. With a beautiful mind, the simple mind to let go of the past so easily. Because if you can do that, all those problems of the past, they just vanish. They're gone.
They're just not there anymore. Imagine how much freedom there is. Because we have so many burdens which we have to carry around. Well, I shouldn't have said have to. We choose to carry them around. And those burdens make life so heavy. Always carrying, I call it the dead coffins of the past on your head. So I like the idea of like coffins. These are all your experiences. What happened yesterday, the day before, last year, you know, the 10, 20, 30 years ago. You know, there are some people in this world, they're still at war with one another, and they can't remember what it was all about. They're just ancestors. They're just, you know, we don't like you, so that's it. You know, Oxford versus Cambridge. I don't know what they ever did to one another, but they're still at war with each other. They don't know why. But, actually, I recently gave we had a discussion in Hong Kong with Professor Gombrich from the Oxford Centre of Buddhist Studies. And I called him the professor from the dark side. Because, you know, Oxford are the dark blues, Cambridge are the light blues. So he's from the dark side. I was really disappointed in him, really, really disappointed. Because I agreed with him and he agreed with me. What's the point of having a discussion when we agree with one another? But anyway, so things actually vanish. And that's an important part of meditation. And one of the experiences where I'd learned how things vanish, you know, not just past and future, but much more profound stuff, is when I was a young man, 21, I think I was. You know, I was just looking at any place I could go to have a retreat, anywhere in UK where I was living. And I didn't care what tradition it was, because you didn't have the choice in those days. So it was a Zen monastery I went to. And in a Zen monastery, you know, you're sitting on this hall next to the wall, on benches next to the wall, facing the wall. And you're supposed to keep your eyes open. And also, on that retreat, you had the Zen master come along with the Zen stick, walking by. That was really scary. And you know, I was told beforehand, oh, it's just to wake you up, it doesn't really hurt. But when the guy next to me got hit, I didn't believe that at all. That really sounded like it hurt. It's supposed to get rid of your sleepiness. And it's true, it does work. The guy next to me got hit and all my sleepiness vanished. I wasn't sleepy at all, I was terrified. But anyway, that was, you know, keeping you awake first thing in the morning. But, you know, you had to keep your eyes open, watching, just staring at this whitewashed wall. And no one told you why. And I didn't try anything once. And strange thing happened. Maybe because I'd already done lots of meditation before. Knew how to let go of past and future and just keep my mind reasonably still. So I wasn't thinking or fantasizing or imagining stuff. You were just watching the wall and just letting that be the most important thing to be aware of. Just watching this white wall. And then after a few minutes, it vanished. And there's no wall there anymore. And for me, that was incredible. You know, this is weird. You know, the wall was there one moment and now it's gone. And it's right in front of you. And there was nothing there at all. And, you know, that's one of the reasons why we're supposed to do that. And afterwards, you know, at the time I wasn't scared. Because this is maybe my conditioning, you know, the 60s. Anything weird is cool. So you don't get scared of strange events. You don't think I'm going crazy, I'm going mad, I'm going blind, what has happened? You say, wow, this is really interesting. So the interest, the inquisitiveness, overcame any fear. And then, of course, after, you know, the wall came back again, you started to contemplate what was happening. And soon, you know, the light bulbs went on in my head. Soon you understand what was going on. It's the nature of the senses, especially the five senses. They can only perceive what is changing. And straight away I remembered, especially sound. If there's a sound in the background, a hum of an air conditioner or a fan, or even like hum of traffic in the distance, after a short while you can't hear it anymore. Because the sound is still there, but the way the brain's sort of takes that data. If nothing is happening, nothing is changing, the very efficient mechanism called the human brain just turns off. It doesn't have to do any work because nothing is occurring. So similar again to your computers, if you don't click the mouse after a few minutes, the screen goes blank. It's exactly what happens with the human brain. Now that's quite common with sound, you know, sounds vanishing because nothing is happening. But it was the first time I thought I noticed it happening with sight. And then I realized, no, this happens all the time, but I never recognized it. Every time I close my eyes, I see the inside of my eyelids. But after a few seconds, I can't see that anymore. Close your eyes now. Can you see the inside of your eyelids? You can open your eyes again, but when you meditate, that's the first thing you'll see with your eyes closed. And after maybe a minute, you don't know when, maybe 30 seconds, 2 minutes, you won't see anything at all. You won't see the inside of your eyelids. You won't see anything. Sight has turned off. It stopped. It ceased. It's vanished. And that's what we're doing with this meditation practice. We're allowing the five senses to disappear, to cease. So, in that simile I said yesterday, which is why I'm giving this talk today, of the emperor. Once the five clothings of the emperor are taken off, the five senses are taken off the human mind, then you can actually start to understand what this human mind is. I'm always just disappointed and just surprised that our Western world just doesn't even admit the existence of that emperor, the mind. Five senses and that's all there is. One of the reasons is because that's the world they live in and they're always totally submersed in that world. They can't even imagine anything else. And the strongest evidence for the existence of a human mind is your personal experience when all the five senses vanish. And you can't feel, you can't see, you can't do anything. So, now my famous story of Greg. I haven't seen him for a while yet. A long time I wouldn't mention his name, just in case, you know, that he got embarrassed. But I don't know where he is now. But he was a fellow who would only meditate, you know, maybe half an hour, 40 minutes a day. And one Sunday afternoon, nothing on the TV, told his wife, I'm going into my bedroom to meditate. So off he went. His wife was doing something. And about an hour and a half later on, he hadn't come out from the bedroom. So his wife went to check on him. So she went into the bedroom and saw him sitting on his meditation cushion, perfectly still. Perfectly still. She couldn't even see him breathing. His stomach, abdomen wasn't going up or down. It was perfectly still. He stopped breathing. She freaked out. And she called 000. Sometimes 111, sometimes 999, depends on what country you're in. I'll be in big trouble if I have an emergency. I go to so many different countries, I'll probably get confused. In Australia, I do 999. In Singapore, 000. I'll get it wrong. But anyway, she rang the right number, and 5 minutes, the ambulance came, you know, with the sirens wailing, and pulling up right in front of the house, and the medics charging in and taking a look at this guy, still sitting there, perfectly still, you know, seeing that he wasn't breathing, feeling his pulse, no pulse. No pulse, no breath. And these were, you know, pretty experts, medics, they know what they're doing. So straight into the gurney, you know, the stretcher, into the back of the ambulance. The wife, you know, followed inside as they sped to Sir Charles Gairdner Hospital. Sped there at full speed, going through all the red lights, the sirens wailing, screeching of tyres, the whole thing, really exciting. And as soon as they got to the emergency room, straight in to the emergency room, and these nurses, you know, just rushing to put this on his head and that on his heart and all this other stuff, and you know, tying him up to all these machines, and the heart, flatline. No heartbeat at all. On the monitor, the brain, the EEG, another flatline. he was dead. At least that's what they thought. But, as he told me later, it's a great story. When people come up and tell these stories, they're really cool because they're great stories. And I asked him, is this absolutely true? He said, yeah, no, I don't lie to monks. Maybe to my wife, or maybe to others, but not to monks. So he's really honest, and I've known him for a long time. So I've got no doubt this actually happened. So, no heart, discernible heartbeat, no sort of brain activity. But, you know, the doctor asked him, what was he doing? What happened? How did he get into this state? He said he was meditating. And the doctor was an Indian guy. You know, brought up in Australia, but his parents had migrated from India. And he'd heard that, you know, some yogis in meditation can suspend all their life activities. This is the first time he actually came across the possibility of this. And it was only that reason. Oh, the other reason, which is fascinating, because it's exactly what it says in the suttas. He said, the strange thing was that even though there's no heartbeat and no brain activity, his body was still warm. And that's in the Chulaweda Sutta. The difference between someone in deep meditation and someone who's dead. Someone who's dead, their body goes cold. In deep meditation, it stays warm. Why? I don't know. But the Buddha said that. And so look, if anyone is meditating here and they get very still, before you call the ambulance, just see if they're warm. If they're warm, just leave them alone. They're just in meditation. Don't cremate them yet. So there he was, sort of, because he was still warm, and because, you know, been meditating, maybe, give him a chance, put defibrillators on his chest. Now these defibrillators, you know, if you haven't seen these, you're a doctor, you've seen these, if you may have seen it on the movies or documentaries, or maybe you've seen someone else being defibrillated, electric shocks, and you know, your body jerks, you know, it's trying to get your heart going again, it's very violent. Many, many times I did this. Nothing worked. Still flatlining. Until he said to me, this is, you know, interesting, he decided, time to come out of meditation. Just like, you know, you do, time to come out. And so as soon as he decided to come out of meditation, beep, 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 the ECG and EEG, perfect. And he just, you know, bent up, you know, because he was actually on his back. I don't know how he got on his back. He bent up, looked around, what's going on? I was in my bedroom. He was in the emergency room of the hospital. And his wife was freaking out, as you can imagine. I said, what's going on? And so, you know, they told him what had happened. And the doctor gave him a thorough checkup, everything. And he was absolutely perfectly healthy. So healthy, they did not even keep him in hospital overnight for observation. He just told him to go home. And it wasn't that far away. He actually walked home with his wife. After being dead for about an hour or two, just walking home afterwards. Talk about dead man walking. Or was it The Walking Dead? I haven't seen those movies, but I did see them on the magazines. And there he was. And the reason I tell that story is that in real meditation, deep meditation, which, and there was an example, you can't feel anything on your body. You know, even they give you electric shocks, you don't come out. They taser you, you don't move. Well, you know, your body moves, but you know, yours is perfectly peaceful. No heartbeat, no brain activity. Your five senses have stopped. I asked him, well, what was going on? Were you unconscious? He said, not at all. I was more conscious than I've ever been in my whole life. Real strong mindfulness and incredibly pleasant. Welcome to the world of jhanas. And that's what it was like. So he fluked one. So really good on him, but you know, he just needs to know what it's like. So please, if your meditation gets really well and very deep, please tell the people you live with. If that happens to me, don't bother calling the ambulance. Don't bury me 10 foot underground. I am perfectly okay. And do you see that story of that? Just it was on the internet. A cat was, I think, in the United States. These are things always happen in the United States. He was hit by a truck. and they thought it had died, and they buried it. You know, they buried this cat because it was, you know, here. They thought it had died. And it actually dug its way out of its hole and went back home. Great little story. You know, the cats can actually dig. I don't think they couldn't have put it in a box. They probably just dug a hole and buried it. And it sort of dug its way out and just went home again. Amazing. Must have really freaked people out. If that was a cat in, say, Singapore or sort of Hong Kong or Malaysia or Thailand, you'd think it's a ghost to see. Ah, the ghost cat has come to haunt me. But anyway, back to the deep meditations. When the five senses vanish, I mean, they really are vanishing. You can't see, you can't hear, smell, taste, you can't touch. You can't feel the body anymore. And that means those five clothings are removed, and now you can experience a human mind. And it's blissful. The best experience of his life by far. And it's not just for the happiness of it. The happiness is like what I call the free gift in the cornflakes box. You know, whenever you buy something, sometimes you get a free gift here, a free gift there. It's like the frequent fly points you get on the flights. You know, just an extra. But the main thing was just the wisdom which comes out of that. Just to know what this body is and what this mind is. To have direct experience that this, what this thing, the human mind is, what the emperor is. And one of the great insights you get from that, which is impossible not to see, is to realize this human mind exists and it is independent of the physical body. It doesn't depend upon the brain. The brain's not working. And it's totally still. It doesn't need a body at all. No seeing, no hearing, no smelling, no tasting, no touching. And you really are. Now this is where you get into some great insights. First of all, you know this human mind actually is, because you've been with it. It's been separated. The way the Buddha described it is actually finding out, this is not the emperor's simile, this is a Buddha simile, finding out the nature of pure gold. And he said if a jeweler, you know, wants to work with gold to make ornaments or whatever, you've got to purify the gold first of all. Get rid of all the other impurities in the gold. Maybe some iron, maybe some tin and other stuff in there. Because once you have these impurities, it's not pure gold. You can't actually work it. It's not so malleable and bendable. So the goldsmith has to purify and purify the gold of all the other sort of elements which shouldn't be there. And once you've got pure gold, you can do whatever he likes with it. And this was a Buddha's simile. He said, the mind is the pure gold. And you've got to get these impurities, seeing, hearing, smelling, tasting, touching, out of the way so you've got the pure stuff, the real mind. And when you've got that real mind, you know what it is, and it is very, very powerful. It is the emperor, and you get to know exactly what it is. The bliss of it is just a bit of an extra. So this is a little idea of what we're doing and why we are doing it. And so how do you get these five senses to vanish, disappear? And the only way to do that is by being still. Now, when nothing is moving, you know, if you've got your eyes open, if your eyes are open and nothing moves, like you're staring at the white wall, the wall vanishes. If you are hearing and nobody makes much noise, now there's always a constant hum somewhere. Can you hear the hum of something? Maybe traffic or something. There's a constant hum somewhere, but after a while that hum vanishes, it disappears. Because it's not changing. You don't have to have total silence. All you have to do is have no change of noise. Which is why it's really important, especially in this room here, when you come in, to try and be as silent as possible. So that there's no sort of change in the noise levels. And then after a while you just can't hear anything anymore. And to sit comfortably, this is one of the other reasons why you're not supposed to just experience pain in meditation. If you just experience pain and think, oh, I'm going to learn from this, I'm going to become wise from this, you know, well, you know what pain is, but you don't know what enlightenment is. You have to get the body so it's constantly in the constant feeling. There's no sort of throbbing sensations of pain or aches or whatever. Because when the body is relaxed and there's hardly any feelings there, or the feelings are pretty constant, then the body vanishes. Which is why we have to have a comfortable position. And it does not matter in a chair, sitting on the floor, in your room, sitting and lying on your bed. The posture does not matter as long as it's comfortable enough so the feelings in the body aren't changing so it can vanish. And I've had deep meditation in so many different postures. I was taught when I started meditating that posture is important. Got to keep a straight back because that means the energies can flow up really nice. And if you have a sloppy back, that means a sloppy mind. That's what I was taught. Utterly go, my young. And also I was taught, you have to get your hands together, the thumbs slightly touching, because that means the energy is all connected together and runs up. Absolute go, my young. That's mega go, my young. But people really get into this, you know, connecting to the earth. So, you know, you don't sit on plastic because that stops the energy flowing from the earth into you. You know where we've built our meditation hall over at Bodhidharma Monastery? We went to the tile shop, you know, for the roofing. And we say, well, we want a quote first. We don't know whether we can afford clay tiles. We maybe just go for the corrugated iron, you know, because it's cheaper. And the guy said, no. If you have corrugated iron, this is the salesperson in Brisk style, just making it up as he went along. He said, no, if you have steel, then the energies won't be able to come through and your meditation will be terrible. He was a great salesman, just making it up. He didn't know anything about meditation. It was 30 years ago. But, you know, it was a great line. So, no, clay tiles, especially Brisk style clay tiles, they let the energies through. Meditation is really good under them. What a liar. But anyway, I really admired him for that. But you know, we wanted the tiles anyway, so we bought them from them. But not because of the sales. Because I've had some great meditations, all sorts of postures. One of the most incredible ones was in the middle of typhus fever. I had typhus fever in Thailand after 1 year. Little mites. Little insects living in the forest, they'd bite you and they'd give you the typhus fever. And at that time, the health department in Bangkok said, no, there is no typhus in that part of the northeast Thailand. And there was only one doctor, I don't remember his name, Wattani Wait. And he would come to Wat Nanachat and treat us. Everyone had this fever sooner or later. And he said, this is scrub typhus. That's all the symptoms. But he looked in his books, there's no scrub typhus there. It's one of the examples. Never allow your learning to stand in the way of truth. The book said there's no scrub typhus there. The truth in front of his eyes, this is scrub typhus. So he, you know, after so many of us got this disease, you know, he managed to convince somebody to send some researchers up from Bangkok, and they only one day, that's all it took them to find these little mites in the forest. They were there, it was scrub typhus. It's only the local villagers had an immunity. They'd grown up in the area. So they get bitten, they wouldn't get anything. They had immunity, but it's only us Western mites, foreigners, going in here. We got it straight away. And anyway, this was the fever we had. I was in it for about 3 or 4 weeks. That was the time when, you know, you feel really terrible with a fever. And Ajahn Chah came to visit. The great master. And I was only a small monk, and this was this big, famous, powerful teacher. And he came just to visit me. You feel, you know, so sort of, wow, you come to visit me. Oh, I feel so happy and so joyful and so elated for about 1 second until he opened his mouth. He was really wise, but his bedside manner was just terrible. He just looked at me and said, Brahma Wang, so you'll either get better or you'll die. And then he left. Thank you very much, great teacher. It's so true. I told that to so many people. And a few really stupid people, they've gone to they kind of see their mother in hospital. Mother, you're going to get better or you're going to die. That's not the right thing to say to your mother, who's probably a Christian anyway. A mother-in-law, yeah. Anyhow, that's what he said to me. But, you know, after a while, I got so fed up. I was actually depressed. You know, it's depression from, like, fevers. Just got no energy. Can't do anything. But, you know, the insight kicks in. You know, when you get really your back's against the wall, and you've heard these sorts of teachings before, that's when they actually come to your assistance. So I thought, you know, what would I tell other people to do? Meditate. Okay, so I started meditating. You had no energy to watch the breath. I'm going to watch the breath. You've got no energy to do that. You're really dull. You can always let go. You can always make peace. You can always be kind. You can always be gentle. That's why I tell people, some people say, oh, I'm in hospital, I can't meditate. Talking about you can't meditate. Well, I can't watch the breath. I've got those tubes up my nose. That's not meditating, watching the breath. Meditating is making peace, letting go, being kind, being gentle. In the back of your t-shirt, could you stand up, please? Yeah. Stand up. That's right. Please. And turn around and see, oh, Bird's got it as well. Make peace, be kind, be gentle. He says, advertising meditation. That's meditation. And even if you're dying, you still make peace, be kind, be gentle. So that's what I did. Laying down there. I just stopped fighting this disease. Let's make peace with it. Be kind to it. Be gentle. And then about an hour later, I came out of this really nice meditation. Now the contrast when you've had a fever for about 3 weeks and just you get blissed out. The contrast is so amazing. Now even now, you're not sort of sick. You know, you're reasonably healthy. And you get a jhana in this retreat and just, wow. Imagine the contrast from, you know, really down the very dumps of depression and sickness and getting a huge meditation. That was so cool. Amazing. And I don't know if this is true, but because I wasn't smart enough to check this out at the time. You know, not experienced enough. And I'm probably pretty sure, you know, if I had any money, I'd bet it all on this. And I bet that was the point where the fever broke. Because when you get these deep meditations, it's not just pleasure and insight. It does incredible things to your body, making it heal. Cancers vanishing, tumors disappearing, and other stuff happening. Because this is powerful stuff. So anyway, one of the things I did notice, though, was when I came out of the meditation, looked at my posture. No, you're in bed, okay, with a fever. You've been in bed all day for days. You know, you don't have a very good posture. Your legs are all over the place, arm this way and arm that way. Just, all bent and crooked all over the place. And then you had this beautiful meditation. And from that time on, I realized all this gomayang, gobbledygook about you have to have your hands touching, you have to be full lotus, back straight, chin down, close eyes, keep it straight, which some people say that is not true. Because you can experience that from yourself. So anyway, just as long as your body's as comfortable as it possibly can be. Maybe because the fever and this is the pain, you know, the dull ache was just constant, I could just let it go. So anyway, there you go. You can actually get into deep meditation from any posture. But what is necessary is that things aren't changing. You can sit there and allow things to vanish. That is what is supposed to happen. So when this happens to you, you know, we're used to sight disappearing. Because, you know, that happens all the time whenever we close our eyes. After a while, sight has vanished. That one sense is turned off. Smell and taste, that's such a soft sense. It's easy to quell that. So that goes pretty quickly. You know, the hard ones to let go of are the hearing and the physical touch. They're the two difficult senses to quieten down. But they're not that difficult. So quiet place. Please be very quiet when you come into the room. So that, you know, people, the sense of sound is disappearing. You don't want to disturb it. That's also why I don't have bells. And it's because too often in my meditation time, You know, you're getting really peaceful. Gong! And, oh, that just, you know, disturbed the meditation. And there's other times, you know, you've got to say the other time, other times you had enough. You know, you're in ache and pain, you know you weren't getting anywhere, you're wasting time, you had to wait for another 10 minutes before someone rang the gong. You know, I thought of actually when I was in Thailand getting like a pea shooter. Remember the old pea shooters? You know, little chews with little peas, dried peas in it, or little stones in it. And getting one of those so I could and hit the gong. Whenever I was. Gong, okay, I'm out. And all this. You know what it's like when you're having a hard time and you just start thinking, how can I escape from this? How can I get out? All these fantasies and plans to escape from the jail of meditation when you're not enjoying it. So there you go. So that's why you don't have any gongs, to keep it nice and quiet. So sometimes, even myself, sometimes half an hour, that's enough for me. The body, the mind says, no, you're not going to go any further. Get up and do something else. And at other times, you're sitting down an hour, 2 hours, 3 hours, is not enough. You want to let the body disappear, let the mind just be. So that's why you can't sort of meditate to a clock. If you meditate to a clock, you're getting really, really dumb, stupid, and it doesn't work. And Ajahn Chah used to say, you know, he came out with all his funny little story. He said, if the length of time you meditate was really important, if the longer you meditate, the more chance there is of you becoming enlightened, then he'd say that all the chickens will be enlightened by now. Because chickens sit for days on their eggs without moving. So if the length of time sitting still was important, chickens will be enlightened. Crazy. Because people think that way. Sometimes on this retreat you might think, okay, this retreat I'm gonna beat my personal best. And then I've done an hour before. I'm going to do an hour and a half. And an hour and a half I did that last retreat. I'm going to do the 2 hours this time. 2 hours, okay. Not moving. I'm going to meet my... This is not the Olympic Games. You don't get any special medals. If you actually do 3 hours meditation without moving, I will give you a chicken. That'll be your prize, stupid. So it's not the time, the length of time, it's the quality, what you're doing. That's more important. But anyway, so no clocks, so the sound doesn't disturb you. And even harder than sound is the physical body. To sit still is so hard. That's why comfort is important. Little cushions here, cushions there. So sometimes, you know, you can buy, you know, just for you. Which cushion? Cushion under here, a cushion under there. Every retreat, I say to people that you should start company. Meditation, especially mindfulness meditation, is really popular. More and more people are doing it. But still, you know, this hasn't changed in 50 years. Where's the innovation and technology to improve meditation cushions? So let's get, you know, high-tech meditation cushions, okay? Come on, guys. So you can have, you know, a remote control. And, you know, if you need sort of the butt to be up a bit, you press the control and a bit of air comes in, it lifts up your bottom. You know, if it needs to, this knee comes up, it's just, you know, left knee, just press the button, it comes up and up and up and nice. You know, why not with meditation cushions? You know, sometimes, you know, using my points when I came back from Indonesia, because I know I was going to be really tired. I got on the business class on Singapore Airlines using my points to upgrade. And he puts all these buttons on there. And the back goes out, the feet, this goes out. They do this on sort of aircraft. Can't we do this on meditation cushions? And, you know, I've been in people's cars, and they can actually, especially when I was in, it was actually California, it's not that cold. You can actually press another button and the seat warms up. So, you know, those of you who come from, you know, Singapore and Malaysia think this place is too cold. You know, it's amazing that, you know, because you're used to the hot weather, you can press a little button and the cushion warms up and you feel more comfortable. For those of you, you know, who come from places like Norway or Europe, you can press another button, it cools off, so you're more cool. You can have, like, you know, really sort of high-tech meditation cushions. Now, come into the 21st century. And even you can have another sort of little knob on there. You press the button and you get a cup of coffee in case you need a bit of a boost of energy. You know, the four ones, latte, short black, flat white, whatever it's called. You can choose your coffee on this high-tech meditation. Why not? It's going to happen, I'm sure. High-tech meditation cushions for the discerning meditator. It's not a fortune. Anyway, it's make a fortune. Anyway, so just, you've got to get your body comfortable. But there's only so much you can do, even with a high-tech meditation cushion. In the end, you know, you just have to just bear with a little bit of discomfort. But you find out the discomfort doesn't change. You keep still. You relax and relax until after a little time the body is peaceful. By being peaceful, it means nothing as much is changing. And because nothing is changing, things disappear. Usually your hands disappear first of all. You can't feel them anymore. Nothing much is going on there, so they disappear. You've lost contact with them. I still remember one guy from Singapore years ago. He came up to me after his first meditation and said, "Ajahn Mom, something terrible happened. What happened? My hands disappeared. I couldn't feel them." "That's really good." He said, "Not good. These are my hands. I'm attached to them." Literally. And after a while he got used to it, hands disappearing and arms disappearing and legs disappearing and backs disappearing and heads disappearing. And it's wonderful when that happens because you don't have to worry about them anymore. And they have many benefits. One of the benefits which I noticed is in Thailand. Now, I was fortunate as a monk in Thailand because I'd meditated before I became a monk. About 5 years before I became a monk, I'd be meditating. And some of these other people who became monks, they were just travelers and they just got inspired and they just became monks straight away without the foundation which I had. So when we had to meditate in the jungle with the mosquitoes, now, Ajahn Chah, there was sometimes that when I was over in Indonesia that somebody had been translating his books. I'd gained some quotes from his books. So they were reading through all of his talks, you know, in the big Ajahn Chah compendium. And after reading through all of his talks, trying to get a quote here and a quote there for a quote book for Ajahn Chah, she said, "He was such a tough monk to live with. And I really admire you, Ajahn Brahm, having endured that for such a long time." Yeah, on the outside it was tough, but it was so inspiring. But one of the things this monk did to us, totally against human rights, torture, was when we started our monastery, Wat Nanachat, no buildings at all, sleeping out in the forest, and he would come over every evening from 6 to 8 for, I think, an hour of meditation followed by a Dhamma talk. Dhamma talk was okay, but the hour of meditation, 6 p.m. to 7 p.m. Mosquito dinner time. And those mosquitoes were incredible. With another friend, I'll tell this story, but I don't exaggerate it. We'd count how many mosquitoes we had on our arms and on our heads. See who got the most. A little stupid competition. And you get to about 60 or 70 at the same time. And after that you can't count anymore. That's what I discovered. Because they're too close together, you can't sort of distinguish one from the other. All you can hear is this slurping as your blood being drained from your arm. That is an exaggeration. But you know, you have an incredible number of mosquitoes at the same time, really irritating. You know, it's almost like torture. And I had my way of getting over this, getting through it. Now, when you start a meditation, you know this is going to happen. If you don't meditate properly, if you waste your time, you know, you're going to suffer for an hour. Quite a lot of times I was suffering. And, you know, you'd open up your eyes and you want to run away. You know, because you couldn't. And the mosquitoes in countries like Thailand, they know that monks can't swat them. And they totally take advantage of you. You know, if they see lay people, they won't go and bite you, because, you know, you might swat them. They don't know if you have five precepts or no precepts, but monks, they know. So they see a brown robe, bald head, okay, safe dinner, guys. So they took advantage of it. But, you know, you open your eyes, and there's all these Thai monks sitting perfectly still. And just, you know, ethnic pride would not let me run away. Just conceit. Only later on I found out they don't bite the Asians so much, because, you know, our metabolism, Westerners, was much higher. So actually the mosquitoes would come for the Westerners.
It's Western food.
Yeah, Western food. It was the first time Western food in that part of Thailand. So it was boutique restaurant. Anyway, no, so I couldn't run away, I just had to endure. So what I learned to do is meditate properly until my body vanished. Couldn't feel the body anymore. And that was such a relief. Because if my mind wandered off, it would go straight to the sort of the mosquitoes biting you. So you just couldn't feel them. He went inside and it was really peaceful, very beautiful, having a wonderful time. And I thanked the mosquitoes for making sure I meditated properly till my body vanished. So wonderful to be able to do that. And this is a great thing you can learn how to do. How you do that? Just by being still. When you're still, things vanish, they disappear. That's the nature of things. And so, the body disappears little by little. But you get to the point where the whole body is still, the arms aren't moving, the head's not moving, nothing else is moving, until the last part of your body, which is moving. You're breathing. And that's the hardest one, to be able to soften so that that vanishes. Because if you stop breathing, if you make the breath pretty still, you're in big trouble. You're dead. Or you will die, if it's the wrong time. So, what one does, is when the body is really still, you're not hearing, you're not smelling, you're not seeing anything, this is where breath meditation kicks in. You just, that's the only thing left moving, because everything else is still, sitting perfectly still, no noise, no smells, no sight, you've got your eyes closed, perfectly still. And then the whole body has disappeared except for the breathing. But just be patient, because you're not doing anything, because the body is still, you don't need so much fuel, you don't need so much oxygen. So the body realizes that and the signal goes back to the lungs, guys, you don't need to work so hard, you know, just breathing softly. And so the breath softens because, you know, your brain realizes you don't need so much air. And because the lungs don't work so hard, the signal goes back to the brain, you don't even need that amount of oxygen. So you're actually breathing less and less and less. Until the breath is so light, there's just hardly much breath going in at all, hardly much breath going out at all. Which means that it's smooth and even, until there's hardly any difference between the in-breath and the out-breath. In fact, you can't discern the difference, it's just breath. And once you get to that stage, the breath is about to vanish, disappears. And that is the last part of your body going. And when that disappears, no more feelings in the body, no more seeing, hearing, smelling, smelling, tasting. The five senses shut down. What happens? Now for many of you get to this stage, no problem at all. When that happens, a lot of times people just don't know what to watch. You know, the breath is gone. What am I supposed to do? Remember that teaching I gave on the first night. You're conscious. There's something in front of your consciousness. Whatever that is, that's important. Just care for that. Don't choose anything and don't try and understand it. Just be with it. Investigate it, don't control it, just let it be and just figure out what's happening. Because for many people, it's like you're in a lit room and you're going out into the darkness. It takes a while for your eyes to adjust to the subtle images of the night time. You've all had that experience, you know, in your house, the lights are on, you have to go into the garden or you're in a darker place if you're living off into the countryside, into the bush somewhere, and you can't see anything at first. You just wait for a little while. And the pupils of your eyes get bigger, allowing in more light, you can start to see more. And after a few minutes, you can actually see your way through the dark. That's pretty similar to what happens in this stage of meditation. The five senses, which are quite gross, they've stopped. Now it's like, there's nothing there, dark, I can't see anything. Just wait, don't do anything, don't disturb things. Don't turn on the five senses again. You're outside of the house, it's in the dark, just wait for a while and you start to see things. If you've developed a lot of mindfulness beforehand, powerful mindfulness beforehand, then even when the senses disappear, you can see lights and stuff when the five senses vanish. But if you don't, which is what most people deal with first of all, it's darkness, you don't know what's going on, stay there please, don't do anything. Just make peace, be kind, be gentle. You're aware of something. You're not unconscious. Just be with whatever you're aware of. Don't choose, don't try and get rid of, don't try and control, just be. And so, beautiful lights come up in the mind. The nimitters. This is when you start to experience your sixth sense, the mind. Lights coming up into the mind. I'll talk more about this later on. But everybody will see one of those lights sooner or later. If you don't see it while you're meditating, you'll see it when you're dead. Floating out of the body and going towards the light. That's why I remember somebody said that their mother was going to have an operation. And the last piece of advice they told me they gave to their mother said, "Mother, I don't want you to die, so if you see a light, don't pay attention to it, come back." I don't want you to go. Whatever you do, just don't go towards the light. I want you back again. So anyway, the light comes up in the deep meditation, and that's the nimitta, that's the side of the mind, that's how we experience this sixth sense. Say more about that in another talk, but just getting to that stage, five senses vanishing. And that is why we have, you know, breath meditation. But look, breath is not something you do. You might say, "I'm going to watch my breath now." Okay, breathing in, breathing out, breathing in, breathing out, breathing in, breathing out. You'll find you can't do that. You lose the breath after a while, because it's not natural, you're forcing it. The very, very, very best way is just relax, let go, be still, make peace, be kind, be gentle, and let sort of things vanish. And then there comes a time naturally when everything else has vanished, but there's only thing left to watch. And it comes to you. And if you do it that way, it's best meditation. But there is a problem sometimes. Have we got time for this? I'll do the problems in meditation later on. I think that's enough information for this time. So this is just understanding the basic idea of stillness leads to disappearance. Disappearance leads to you coming close to the mind and even experience this nature of the mind and getting insights in what a mind is and how it works. Understanding this is what happens after you die, so you're no longer afraid of death as well. Huge insights, understandings through direct experience of the nature of this mind. And it's also incredibly pleasant. You're a happy little meditator. And you always know, you don't always know that someone's getting into these states where you see this silly smile on their face, grinning from ear to ear. And you know that someone is really smiling. Yeah, they're getting somewhere. Sitting here, smiley little happy little meditator. Ooh, yes, this is good. Ooh, yeah. So happiness is always there as well. And just basically, you get one of those experiences on a meditation retreat, and you'll be thanking the Buddha. And, oh, thank you so much. Now, my first time I got a deep meditation, my meditation teacher at the time, my feeling afterwards was to jump up afterwards, grab hold of his feet and kiss them. Just gratitude. It's so great. Someone giving you such a beautiful experience. But please don't kiss my feet. They're dirty. But just have a wonderful meditation. And see what happens. Very good. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. Very good. So going, oh, there's interviews. I didn't announce afterward yesterday or the day before. There's pieces of paper with the